that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're going to get across that wasteland, and we're going to do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. On today's show, will LeBron's health concerns derail the Lakers this season? Plus, Rams running back CJ Anderson is on set discussing his future, LA Super Bowl run, and plenty more. And Michael Rappaport breaks down the latest between his Giants and Odell Beckham Jr. We've got a busy show today. Let's get to it.
The Lakers' fate this season might be going from bad to worse. The Athletic reports the Lakers are, quote, privately a little concerned about LeBron's groin strain. This is the same injury that forced him to miss 17 games. They are reportedly also concerned if LeBron will, quote, pick up the intensity and propel the team back into the playoffs. The Lakers are currently 3 games out of the 8th seed. We're joined in New York by FS1 NBA analyst Chris Broussard. Chris, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Jenny and Skip. How you guys doing?
We're glad to have you.
It's good to see you.
I'm going to start with you on this, Chris. How big of an issue is this groin strain?
Well, was that Skip's idea to show that air ball in the All-Star game?
Yes, I liked it. Can we show that again, please? Thank you.
No, I think there's a few things going on here, Skip. I think one, you know, anytime a guy comes back from injury, you're not going to be in game shape. So it takes you a few games to get ready, get back to game shape. And with LeBron, he's the type of player that players have to get used to playing with him, and he has to get used to playing with them. So I think those are a few of the reasons for what looked like subpar play in terms of by LeBron James standards in his first 6 or 7 games back. Keep in mind, he's averaging 23 points, 12 rebounds, and 10 assists since he's been back. But I think what people are looking at are the lack of explosiveness. It comes in bursts, but it's not there consistently. I think that's also just he's 34 years old, and he's in his 16th season. And I think the aging process is beginning to hit LeBron, and he knows it, so he paces himself. Last year he paced himself, maybe even the year before, but then he had this huge burst at the end of the season. Remember, everybody was talking about the Cavaliers in these dire terms. Are they the same team? Are they going to be okay? Is LeBron going to be able to get them back to the finals? And he came on very strong in the second half of the season. I expect to see the same thing. I talked to a person close to him this morning, and they said the groin really isn't a problem. They think he's just kind of been pacing himself because he's not quite fully in basketball shape. And, you know, as he gets back into that shape, he's got to pick his spots. But I expect, Skip, to see a reinvigorated LeBron James as the Lakers try to make this playoff push.
Did I just hear my friend Chris Broussard say that the aging process has hit LeBron James? I think those words just came out of your mouth.
It has. And this, remember last year when everybody was saying, is this LeBron's best season ever? I was saying, no, it's a great season, but it's not his best ever because his best ever, he was a terror both offensively and defensively.
Right, I agree.
He is not playing good defense. Even before the injury, he's just not the same defender, which is to be expected at his age and this stage of his career. Now, this LeBron is still very good. It's still great. It's still arguably the best player in the world. But, yeah, I think it's fair to say that he's not quite the same player.
Yet, I'm going to give you this. Down the stretch last year with those Cavaliers, I thought he was a terror offensively. Not defense. He rested on defense.
Right.
But he gave effort, energy, fire, desire on offense at the highest level I've seen in his whole career. I was highly impressed. He did carry that team down the stretch all the way into, you know, to the very end of game one of the finals, obviously.
Yeah, I think, look, offensively, he's going to be fine. And even we're sitting here talking about the Lakers being concerned about his play. I think a big part of it is what they're seeing defensively. You saw Trae Young. And look, LeBron's not expected to be able to stay in front of Trae Young. But in that Atlanta game, Trae Young just blows by him.
He did.
And during these six or seven games, what the Lakers have seen is we kind of have had to try to hide LeBron defensively. You've never had to say that about him, even earlier in the season when we know he wasn't as good as he used to be on defense. You still may not have had to hide him as much. But again, I'm like you. I expect him to come out. This is what the Lakers season is about. At best, no one expected them to beat Golden State and get to the finals. They certainly expected them to make the playoffs. And at this point, with LeBron missing 18 games, I think it would be a relative achievement for them to get into the playoffs, especially if they can avoid the eighth seed. Because I believe if they can get to seven, now I know that's a big if.
It's a big
if. Spurs are there right now. But if they can get to seven, I like the Lakers over Denver.
Okay.
I like the Lakers to make a decent playoff run and be able to get to the second round, if not the conference finals, if they can avoid Golden State early.
Okay, before we leave the groin injury, I can't get past, I'm going to bring it up one, maybe last time on this show, maybe last time, maybe tomorrow will be the last time. But Chris, December 26th, the day after the fateful groin injury was suffered at Golden State on Christmas Day, LeBron, as you recall, tweeted, dodged a bullet, and then hashtag back in no time. And he had seen the MRI. Again, he said he heard a pop the day before, which is not good, a really bad sign. So did he tear it or not? I don't know. And then we were thinking 3 weeks maybe, and it was the maximum of about almost 6 weeks. So what happened? Why would he have tweeted that the day after if he didn't think it wasn't nearly as bad as he thought it was on December 25th?
I did talk to one of his, now the word they're using is associates, about that. And he said LeBron thought, when you said he heard a pop. Remember, this is a guy that's never been seriously injured. And he keeps his body in great shape. We know all the money he puts into it. So I think I was told he heard a pop and he thought it was a lot worse. And he was happy to find out, okay, it's only a strained groin. Whether it takes 3 weeks or 6 weeks, he was happy that that's all it was. That's what I've been told. So, and again, I'm hearing that he should be fine, that the groin they don't think is a problem. I don't think, Skip, if LeBron really thought the groin was still a problem, that he would have played in the All-Star game, or certainly not as much as he played.
And by the way,
you know, and you saw, look, I'm surprised Kyrie played. I mean, he hadn't played his last two games because of the knee. But I don't think LeBron would have played like that.
Hey, I was surprised that guy number two up in Toronto played. Supposedly he had a big knee injury last week or knee issue of some kind. I don't know what's going on. But, hey, the pass off the backboard from D-Wade for the dunk in the fourth quarter, that looked like full-scale LeBron, right? I mean, it looked like he was all out.
Well, to your point, even there was a play, I believe, late in the Atlanta game. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if I think he drove to the basket and had a slam late that, you know, it looked like old LeBron. I believe he can do that in spurts and certainly offensively as he rests defensively. But look at the guys in LeBron's draft class, Skip. Dwayne Wade is about to retire.
He is.
Carmelo Anthony can't find a team that wants him. Chris Bosh is retired.
Yep.
Kobe, remember in Kobe's 16th year, that was the last year he made the playoffs. He had the Achilles injury at end of that year, and then he battled with injuries the rest of his career. LeBron has spoiled us to some degree because this was his worst injury, and it was only 18 games. I hope that going forward, we don't start to see these little nagging injuries hit him, but it is father time, and we know what they say about him.
What did you make of our friend Brian Windhorst saying the other day that word on the street is that LeBron now weighs 280 pounds? I've always thought he weighed 280 pounds, but what do you think about that?
No, you're actually right, because I know during some of his earlier years in the middle of the year, early in the season, he's in great shape. He would be close to that. But Mike Mancias, who's LeBron's trainer, he's with LeBron everywhere. He's been with him since his days in Cleveland in his first go-round. He came out and really disputed it strongly. Obviously, Brian is plugged in, but I think people are just kind of speculating. Look, I've talked to people around the league, Skip, that have said they don't think LeBron, and I'm not just talking about these last six or seven games. I mean this season, even as he's put up good numbers, they don't see the same explosion that they used to see.
I don't either.
Some people are beginning to think that you're starting to see a little bit of a decline in LeBron's game.
And in these games since his return, especially the game at Boston, at Philly, at Atlanta, I just didn't see that fire and desire. I don't know if he was protecting, guarding, just sort of going three-quarters speed because he was afraid to let it fly. But what did you see in those three games? Because I didn't see the guy I saw down the stretch in Cleveland last year.
And that's what the Lakers have talked about being concerned about as well, is the lack of intensity. Look, you and I both know at times LeBron has sulked. If he feels like he doesn't really have enough to help him go as far as he wants to go, which I guess now would be deep into the Western Conference playoffs, he can sulk. We've seen it in Cleveland before, and I think that's what you're seeing a little bit of. I think when he sat there in during those 18 games, or really those first 17, and saw this team go 6-11 and really struggle without him, that may have taken something out of him mentally and emotionally. And he's got to get it back. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He has got to, however he feels about this team, he's got to lead it, and he's got to play with that intensity because they will feed off of him. I agree with LeBron and Rondo when they said before the break, we need this. This is at the right time for us. I think the young guys, they're a little further removed now from the trade deadline issues. I think LeBron is probably going to be healthier. Lonzo should be back, and that's hurt their defense losing him. So I think the young players are ready to come back and try to make a push. They need to see an engaged and an intense LeBron who exudes confidence in not only in himself, but in them if they're going to make this run.
Chris Broussard is on fire today with objectivity about LeBron James. He just said publicly, did Chris Broussard, that he has sulked before. And I would agree that there are times, but did he really sulk before overtime of game one in Oakland last year in the finals? But I'll leave that alone for now. But remember the virtual rant from Rich Paul, I think it was to The Athletic, about when LeBron was going to come back or not come back. In fact, you'd talked to Rich, remember, earlier that same day,
recall? Yeah, and he told me if it were the playoffs, he would have been playing. That was about the third week, was it, of the injury?
About the third week. But then maybe he just got tired of the questions later in the day. But his comments to The Athletic were in the form of a rant. It got profanity laced, and the point was, we will come back when we are ready to come back. And it smacked of the Lakers are starting to sort of encourage us strongly to come back, starting to want us to come back before we're ready to come back. Is he sulking a little bit because he felt forced to return at a schedule?
Possibly. LeBron would not respond favorably to that, I know, but I also think that he probably was just like, look, this is a groin injury. You don't want to play around with this. If I come back too soon, then you could re-injure it, and then the season is really lost. And I don't think he should be blamed for expecting this team to be able to hold the fort while he's out. Like, they really, Skip, they let go of, I mean, losing to the Knicks, losing to the Cavs. We really shouldn't even be having a will-they-make-the-playoffs conversation But we are because they kind of let the ball go.
Although,
now, I will
Chris,
say they did yeah. have injuries.
And remember, they won at Oklahoma City, and they had Houston dead to rights and let them off the hook at Houston. Remember that? That was the impressive side of the scale. But I agree with you. There were some nights when it went south, and then Lonzo got hurt at Houston. And you're right. They probably didn't hold up their end of the bargain high enough to warrant LeBron coming back and saying, well, we got this. But again, how much how much do you feel like his legacy is on the line if they miss the playoffs? Will anybody hold it against them?
I think it depends on how they miss. I mean, if he gets hurt again, misses even like five games, then I don't think they're going to make it. And I don't know how much you could blame him just because he missed. I think from that point, people would begin to look at, is LeBron the same? You know, and I think Lakers fans might start to worry, we got three more years, but it might not be the vintage LeBron that we thought we were getting. I think that's what you see. Look, his legacy, you and I both have him ranked beneath Michael Jordan. I don't know what he can do that's realistic to pass Jordan. But otherwise, he's viewed as a top five player. I think where that stuff is secure. His three championships, his 8-9 finals appearances, all that's secure. But I said it before he went to L.A. When you go to the Lakers, they expect championships.
Agreed.
They're not going to be excited about a second round run.
No. Nope.
You know, about a Western Conference final, even getting to the finals and losing. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be excited about that. And all of the other players on LeBron's stature who played for the Lakers, Wilt Chamberlain, Jerry West, Kobe, Shaq, Kareem, Magic, go on and on. They all delivered at least one championship.
They did.
And when LeBron signed with the Lakers, they were expecting at least one championship. And, they could make up for it in the summer if they get Anthony Davis, maybe another player, and, you know, then we'll see what they could do. But it would be bad. I'm not going to say disastrous or colossal if they don't make the playoffs, because we can look at how they played with LeBron, fourth seed, well over 500 with him, to when they played without him, and that's really why they wouldn't make the playoffs, just because he was injured. So I think it'd be a little ding to his reputation.
Yep.
Maybe he wouldn't be considered the best player in the world anymore. But I don't think it'd be a real dent in his legacy, for in the long term.
So my takeaway from this discussion is I am not going to give LeBron the injury excuse for the groin right now. It seems like he's well enough that he could carry this team to the playoffs.
Fair enough. No more excuses.
I think that's fair.
Chris, thank you for your time.
No mercy.
February isn't just about one super-sized football game. On Spotify, there's thousands of free sports podcasts that agonize over the preseasons, off-seasons, and plain old regular seasons of nearly every sport imaginable. Basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, curling, and even hurling. Yeah, that's a real sport. Look it up. Now it's so easy to stay updated with the latest trade rumors, predictions, and scorching hot takes from some of your favorite game's biggest names. So take it one episode at a time and give 110% of your attention to the thousands of free sports podcasts on Spotify, because the best offense is a good podcast.
No mercy.
Well, our next guest signed with the Rams in the middle of December. He then had three straight 100-yard games, including against, sorry to remind you, Cowboys in the playoffs.
Yep.
And he helped lead the Rams to the Super Bowl. Now he's about to be a free agent. CJ Anderson, welcome to Undisputed.
Welcome.
Good to have you with us.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about right now your future. Do you expect to be back with the Rams or somewhere else?
I hope so. I mean, we'll see. Obviously, last year, coming off a 1,000-yard season and being top 10 in rushing and top 5 in yards per carry, yards after contact, getting released by Denver and then, you know, going through the whirlwind and getting released this year, lets you know it's a crazy business. So
it's a crazy business.
We'll see.
And what you did was even crazier.
Yeah.
And I got to get this off my chest. I got to get it out of my craw, because what you did to my Dallas Cowboys, and I'm a lifelong fan, was simply the most shocking development I have ever witnessed in any playoff game I have ever watched in all my history, because I didn't see this coming. Remember, my Cowboys had just shut down, albeit at home, the Seattle rushing attack, which was ranked number one in the National Football League.
Amen.
So what's the last thing I'm expecting at the Coliseum from the newest Ram, CJ? Even though you had bedeviled my team before in game two, you remember, in 2017 yes. in Denver, which was an avalanche on top of my Cowboys, but you ran wild in that game. So please help me out. Save me from myself, because I still can't make peace with how it happened. What happened in your eyes that night when you guys went for 273 rush yards, 170 in the first half, and you were the primary perpetrator of all of the above? How did that happen?
I think, you know, one, the article that came out about tipping and y'all front.
That came out, like, their tells.
Tells. Right. That some of that was true, not like 100%. But I just think
Where your linemen could just tell what they which way my linemen were going to go, right?
They said that. Obviously, me lining up 7 yards in the backfield, I didn't get to see that much. But I just think the whole line took a challenge. You know, that all week we was hearing Cowboys stop number one in Seattle, and, you know, they're going to shut down me and Gurley, and, you know, we can't run the ball on them. So I think our O-line took that offensive. Me and Todd took that offensive, and we had fun.
I saw gaping holes. Is that what you were seeing? Like big real estate, lots of green?
It's been a while since I've had some holes that big.
Really?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So did the Cowboys talk? Did you talk to them after they finally dragged you down after 25 yards? Did you say it?
Nah, we didn't talk. I remember now, I probably shouldn't say this, but I remember when Jalen Smith, like in the middle of our cadence, will yell out certain calls and things. And you start to pick those up, you know, me being a veteran in the game, you start to pick those up during the game. So you go to the sideline, hey, you know, when Jalen says this, when DeMarcus does this, you start to pick up little tendencies. And, you know, thank God that Coach McVay listened to us, and, you know, we had a successful day that night.
Were you shocked at how easy it was?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You never go in thinking you're going to rush. I mean, two of us rushed for 100, and we rushed for 270. You never go in thinking you're going to rush for 270. You want to run the ball effectively, and, you know, you want to control the game and control the clock, but you never think it would be something, you know, like that. And it's a dominant performance by our O-line, and, you know, me and Todd just picked the right spots.
Let's go bigger picture. So what you pulled off was probably the greatest off-the-couch story ever because, again, you get released by Carolina. This is after Denver, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then you spend 5 weird days with Oakland and John Gruden. What happened there? I don't even
know. Two O-linemen got hurt. And John Gruden pulled me in and was honest. Was like, you know, we got a $100 million quarterback. We got to protect him. They got to bring a guy up from practice squad and bring a guy back they cut earlier in the year because he knew the play. So I understood that. I just got there. I was supposed to – it was kind of like the Todd Gurley situation. I was supposed to play for Doug Martin, but Doug Martin ended up playing that week. I could say this about the Raiders, you know, for all Raider fans out there. Gruden is doing the right things when it comes to, like, preparation and game planning.
By the way, you grew up
putting in. I grew up in the Bay too, so, you know, I got a little bias to the Raiders too.
But you believe.
But I do believe in where it was going. Now, I don't know what's going to happen in the draft and what's coming up free agency for them. But as far as, like, you know, how to prepare and how to get your team ready to play a football game, John's doing the right thing.
Okay, so then you wind up with the Rams out of the blue, and you go for 167 against Arizona and 132 against San Francisco. Games that didn't really matter, but
matter to me.
You were under the radar. You were kind of under the radar until the playoffs started. But in my view, this is just my two cents from a distance, it looked like Sean McVay decided that you were just running at a higher level than Todd Gurley. Hurt or not hurt, that you were the hotter back. Did you get that vibe and feeling from your new head coach?
Nah, not that one. It's Ty's team. It's still Ty's team, no matter what happens, even if I come back. I think I earned playing time. You know, I learned in this league, you know, being 7 years in, you can earn opportunity. And I believe I earned opportunity. And I think having two capable backs who can do it, I think that, you know, nothing against Malcolm Brown or John Kelly or, you know, who they had before, but I think two capable backs who've done it in this league at a high level, I think it gave, you know, McVay more tools to play with. And then, you know, you kept Gurley fresh. Like, you know, the goal keeping Gurley fresh was hopefully he can spring the home run. I mean, obviously I'm not going 80, you know, no time soon. And that's fine with me. But hopefully we keep it fresh so he can go.
How hurt was Todd when you got there?
He was more hurt than what we thought. He was, right. You know, the injury was a little bit more than what everybody in the building thought, including himself.
What would you call a sprained knee? Is that fair?
It was, you know, he never really tell me. It was tough. I would say sprained knee. Obviously, it's the same knee injury he's had before in his career. So, obviously, I had surgery on my meniscus, and once you have a knee, you always have a knee. So, it aggravates, and it just, you know, if he was getting, you know, a lot of touches earlier in the year, obviously, him being one of the best running backs, probably was the case.
Against my team, Gurley had a couple of bursts that were big.
I mean, yeah, when he looked good,
Todd Gurley to me, right?
So,
but then you get to New Orleans, and it looked like you were going to get the lion's share of the carries at Saints, right?
Right. We came in, we knew both of us going in the game, both of us going to be used. Now, I don't think it was a hot hand thing because it was more like, you know, it was up front. I was receptive to tell, like, hey, if Ty want to go, he want to go. And I was okay with that. Mm. Obviously, you know, he got him there, you know, 21 touchdowns this year. And, you know, what he's done in his league, you know, since he's been in has been great. So it was more like, CJ, we're going to play you, you know, but if our guy wants the ball and if he wants to go and he wants to do this, then we're going to roll with 30. And that was okay with me.
So what did Belichick's defense do to stop you that my defense couldn't figure out to do? What was the difference?
Please tell him.
I think Bill does a great job of putting his team in the right position. You know, they played great gap control against us. You know, they gave us some different coverages that was not shown on tape.
Really?
I mean, 90%. Yeah. If anybody want to go back and watch Super Bowl, like, if you watch their season, 90% they've been in man. They play a little zone here, but they probably play 80% zone against us. You know, just maybe because they probably didn't think they had the best matchups.
Was that to help stop the run, maybe?
I don't know if it was help stop the run. I think it was help to stop our big plays. You know, just from the outside in when I was watching the Rams, you know, when they came on primetime and things, big plays got the offense going. The run game got the offense going. So if you slow down the run game and then you limited the big plays, you know, obviously we had plenty against Dallas. And then, you know, our big plays against New Orleans was just enough to find a way to win in New Orleans. So I think they slowed down a lot of our big plays. It was kind of frustrating, and that's kind of how the game went. It sucks. It's kind of how it went.
Yep.
So much talk all season was about your weight. And my one question is, did it bother you? Some of that criticism, of that talk.
Nah. The crazy part is, I've been in this league for 7 years. I'm undrafted. I've always been over 4 yards a carry. You know, I've been a top 10 back. I've been a Pro Bowler. Nothing changed. I like the production, the productivity. People miss that inside the lines. Like, you know, I'm not Ezekiel Elliott or Todd Gurley or Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, but I'm productive in my own way.
You are.
I try to get as many first downs as I possibly can, and I help the team win in other ways with blitz pickup and things of that nature. And using the cerebral mind is what I do.
Yeah.
You can carry your weight.
And you're going to give him some nightmares, I think, for
Still.
A while. Skip, I'm sorry. But, CJ, so good to have you.
Oh, it's good to be here.
Way to go. Thank you. No
mercy. Back to the NFL. The Giants reportedly came close to trading Odell Beckham Jr. last year, but they ultimately kept him because of the Patriots. Chris Sims said yesterday on Pro Football Talk that New England's interest in the star wide receiver made the Giants think twice about moving him. Trade rumors have continued to surround Beckham, but the Giants have said they're keeping him. We're joined by our friend, Michael Rappaport.
He's back.
Host of the Iron Rappaport Stereo Podcast. He is back.
Mm-hmm.
And, Michael, I don't need to tell you, but we know you're a huge Giants fan. So what do you make of all this? What does it tell you?
It tells me that if the New York Giants somehow, for some reason, needed the Patriots and Bill Belichick to validate Odell Beckham's greatness, I'm more concerned than I was before I knew this. I didn't need Belichick. I didn't need my cousin. I didn't need my nephew to tell me that we have a Ferrari, okay? And I was on this show, on the front lines, when Ben McAdoo, who I called the Wackadoo, sat Eli Manning. I was offended by it. I didn't like how it went down. And that was my sentimentality. Mm-hmm. But McAdoo, the Wackadoo, was correct. And I'll say this, Skip, and you know way more about this. If we start the season with Eli Manning as our starting quarterback, and we have this Ferrari, who we know has been temperamental, We know he's gotten injured, but you need to have a Ferrari with that kind of engine. It needs to be let loose every now and then. Mm-hmm. For the last two seasons, it hasn't been able to be let loose because there's no one who could throw the ball downfield. It is time, unfortunately, to really, the hard facts is we cannot start another season. It's been two seasons too many mm-hmm. with Eli Manning as our starting quarterback. So it's very concerning to me. It's weird that they needed that validation from the Patriots. I don't know who you trade for an Odell Beckham because he's one of the top five football players on offense or defense in the league right now.
Hmm. Did he change your life last year? No, but no. You can argue that the quarterback is not capable of changing your life, right?
He can't even throw the ball down the field anymore. I love this man, mm-hmm. Eli Manning, but it's time to go.
He won you two rings.
He won me two rings.
He beat Tom Brady twice.
Not once.
Mm-hmm.
No. No, twice. He beat him twice. But it was, you start to think, like, what year was it? It was a while ago.
True. Mm-hmm.
It's time. We can't start the season with Eli Manning as our starting quarterback. We can't do it. Mm. Eli Manning should bench himself. He should know, like, I don't have it. I don't have it. And it's gonna be detrimental to Saquon Barkley at a certain point because they're going to be like, well, we know they can't throw it down the field to Odell. We could start, you know, gearing to stop Saquon. And then that shuts him down. And these both these guys are healthy. These are two Ferraris. So, Skip, I don't know where to go with this.
Mm. Even if you do draft Dwayne Haskins or, heaven forbid, Kyler Murray.
No.
I don't know.
No.
Okay? But if you do draft one of those kid quarterbacks, aren't you still going to be stuck with Eli for a little while?
Yes.
Right?
The great Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. He sat an entire year.
A whole year. And it probably served him well, I must say. It served Aaron Rodgers well to wait 3 years. It just does.
So yes, both those guys, potentially. We can't start the season with a rookie quarterback. It'll be worse than having Eli there.
Here's my problem with Odell, and I do like him personally. Mm-hmm. He gets mad at me because he thinks this gets personal, but it's not personal. Your Ferrari, and he is top of the line Ferrari. Mm-hmm. He winds up in the shop too much because he needs tune-ups almost every Sunday because something sets him off. The littlest thing can send him completely over the edge. And when he goes over the edge, he is a lost cause.
I agree.
Because you get tirades, you get tantrums, you get melodrama, you get drama. He is like LeBron, a drama king, because he sort of creates his own drama. And then once he goes over the edge into the drama, he can't seem to click it off and come back and play football, right?
I agree.
So they gave him his money. You're stuck with the money. And now I'm going to look at it from a Brady perspective. I'm a Brady fan. I'm not so much a New England fan. But I believe Odell's career would thrive at a much higher level in Foxborough than it would in the Big Apple. I'm not sure Odell was made for the Big Apple because it's just too much him. Mm. It allows Odell to be too much Odell after hours off the field, and he tries to live up to a social media image that is detrimental to his football performances. That's just me, because he thinks he has to play a role. He thinks, like we just talked about Tebow saying, don't let the internet define you. Don't let anybody. And Odell let the media sort of tell him who he was. He's got to be Odell. He's got to be the hair. He's got to live up to all of the image as opposed to being the Ferrari, because the Ferrari, by any name, is virtually unstoppable, because when he's right, he's the rightest of all the receivers to me. And to me, if he wound up in the New England culture with its structure and its work ethic and its discipline, where everybody's the same, check your ego at the door. Tom Brady checks his ego at the door. I think, and again, you don't want to hear this as a Giants fan, but I think Odell's career would take off because they wouldn't allow the tantrums. They wouldn't allow any of it because he would just know, if I do that one time, I'm going to be gone. The problem is that if you trade for him, and they've got a draft stockpile that they haven't had for a while because they do have a first and they have 2 seconds and they have a lot of later picks. So they could offer you more than probably anybody could offer you in draft picks, but then they would have to absorb a $21 million cap hit next year, which is not the Patriot way.
Right.
That's my problem with this whole scenario. Would I like to see Tom Brady get Odell for the next 5 years? God, would I?
That's the one thing they didn't have this year.
They don't have it. And I mean, he hasn't had it really since Randy Moss.
Yes. I mean, obviously, any team would thrive with Odell mm-hmm. Beckham, but
if he's right.
If he's right, but... Yeah. I mean, the fact that he's in his prime of his youth, and he's, even though he does get injured, the fact that he's still young and still healthy, and when he's still playing, he's still at top speed, and we're not able to use that and see that for two seasons mm-hmm. now.
Yep.
I would be frustrated. I've been on this show, and I've bashed him, mm-hmm. and I've been hard on him, but it's like we cannot start the season next year with Eli or one of these rookies.
Mm-hmm.
And so... I don't know. It's like you got paid. You're in New York. I don't know what's going to happen. He would be great anywhere. I mean, with any quarterback that could throw the ball down the field.
I don't know.
He can disrupt.
He can – if he doesn't like where it's headed, I think New England's the only place where he would thrive.
But it's not happening. He's not going
to – Well, I'm trying to speak it into existence.
What are you trying to speak it into existence for? Why do you want my guy to go to New England? They have enough. Okay, C.J. Anderson's here later on in the show. We just watched them win their 19th Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Was it 19?
29th, I think.
Tom Brady and all this stuff. I've submitted. Mm-hmm. Well, they have enough. Mm-hmm. They have enough going for them. They're not taking our Ferrari.
Tom Brady just beat all-time odds. He just won the Super Bowl by making Julian Edelman the MVP of the Super Bowl. Little Julian, former college quarterback at Kent State, mm-hmm. seventh-round draft choice, age 32, coming off complete knee reconstruction. He won the Super Bowl with that guy?
You're saying that like that you're belittling Julian Edelman. Julian Edelman is, listen, we could say whether he's Hall of Fame, his stats, when it's time to play in the biggest, mm-hmm. He won him two Super Bowls.
Wait, Julian won Tom two Super Bowls?
Yeah.
Ooh, I think it was quite the other way
first
around.
First of all, when it was 28-3 versus Atlanta, he's the guy on the sideline that was like, it's going to be a hell of a story. This is going to be – and you know what?
Tom Brady was yelling that.
No, Julian was saying
I
it's going to be –
I got your story wrong.
No, it was okay. Julian that said
In the fourth quarter in overtime, Tom Brady threw for 246 yards.
And listen –
that would be a great Super Bowl just by itself.
I'm not saying Tom isn't the GOAT.
Mm-hmm.
I just said it. I don't like saying it. My stomach is it doesn't feel good. But Julian Edelman, when it's time to play football – he's playing football. When it's time to go over the middle, catch the ball, and take the shot, he's the guy doing it in the biggest of the big games. We can hate on him all we want, and I'm the biggest Giants fan in the world.
You are.
But the guy's, he's a champion.
Can Julian Edelman run by anybody? He can outquick people underneath, but he can't run by anybody. Can Odell? Yes.
Obviously, Odell Beckham is a superior athlete, a superior wide receiver. But I'm telling you something. I'll take a Julian Edelman when it's crunch time to run over the middle, get smacked, catch the ball, not catch the ball. Even in the playoff game, the playoff game before, he missed the catch. He came back. I mean, this is what you need. This is Odell Beckham could take a little bit from Julian Edelman. It's the next play, the next play, the next play. You're making me – how did you spin this reverse psychology and make me stand up for the Patriots and my guy Odell Beckham and a Giant – And sit here and defend Julie. What are you doing to me?
When the Patriots acquire Odell Beckham Jr., I think Tom Brady could play until he's 46,
acquire.
47.
What's going on here?
I'm speaking it into
according to Michael,
it's
he
happening.
Want this to
I don't know what you. How did
table.
You spin this on?
I just
I don't know
see
if he could conform to
it.
The Patriots' way. Yeah. That
I don't think so either.
Place. I don't know if that has him.
And they don't pay like that. They
it's
don't pay players
kind.
Out there.
Yeah, $65 million in guarantee.
But they should pay Julian Edelman. He won you two Super Bowls.
Okay. Well, Michael, good to have you. No mercy. Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are two of the biggest names that are expected to hit free agency this offseason. New video from Sunday's All-Star Game shows the two of them chatting in a tunnel, and Kyrie appears to say the words two and max to KD. They reportedly could both wind up together in New York this summer. We're joined once again by Michael Rappaport. So, Michael, do you think these two will end up together with the Knicks?
Well, first of all, not only am I a great trash talker and you know sports commentary guy, mm-hmm. I'm a fantastic lip reader.
Oh, good.
And he said, they didn't say two and Max. He goes, two. You guys relax. That's what he said, you guys relax. And he was talking to all of us. Yeah. Now listen, what I love, do I think, do I imagine, do I lay my head on the pillow dreaming that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant would come to the Knicks with max deals and sign for 3 years and get us that parade down Fifth Avenue? Yes, I would love that. That would be such a beautiful way to end this rocky road that we've been on since 1973.
1973.
Dude, but does that make me sleep well, thinking that it's definitely going to happen? Mm. Absolutely not. Mm. I have no idea. Yes, I would love it, but I don't know. Boston might, you know, tighten up the screws and go for a championship run. Does he leave after that? I don't know. My prediction has always been that Kevin Durant will more likely leave Golden State if the Golden State Warriors win. I cannot see Kevin Durant leaving the Golden State Warriors if they lose because of all the scrutiny that he took the last time he left a team. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I would love it. Mm. Of course, it would be fantastic, especially with that young talent and the David Fizdale, who I think is getting the most out of that young talent.
He is, yeah.
And a potential a Duke player coming to us, and maybe another ancillary player. Mm-hmm. I would love it, Skip. Mm-hmm. But I can't say I rest my head on the pillow going, oh, it's going to happen. This is going to be great. I toss and turn. I don't rest easy about this whole thing. So I don't know. But as far as lip reading, he said, you guys relax.
You guys relax.
Yes.
So I thought before the All-Star game, this was going to happen. It just felt right. And I know there's much to be played out. Golden State, what happens there? What happens to Kyrie in Boston this year in this playoff run? Jason Tatum at the All-Star game, he just flat out went right on the record and said, on February 16th, I predict we are going to win the NBA championship. That's what he said. Boston Celtics. And I think the last time I checked, Kyrie's going to have to be part of that. Now, to what I saw on Sunday night in Charlotte, that felt staged to me.
Yes.
That felt like they were playing it for the media because Kevin is sick and tired, as I call him, Kevin Durant, because he do rant. And he ranted and ranted and ranted about this, what was it, 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
And I think they conspired to put on a post-game show that would relight all the fires about Kyrie and Kevin are going to New York. And it was odd to me that right after the game, just as soon as it ended, and I'm just watching via TNT, but I see Kyrie and Kevin yucking it up on the court. They went right to each other, and they're kind of playfully shoving each other, playing around. And then all of a sudden, it's time for the MVP celebration, and who's going to win it? And I was pretty sure the best player on the planet is going to win. It's Kevin Durant, who took over yet another fourth quarter. So he is called up front and center. He wins the award. It's presented, and everybody applauds. And then as they continue to talk, and he does his little interview with the commissioner, and all of a sudden everybody thins out and goes to their family and friends. And one guy was left clapping right behind Kevin Durant, and it was Kyrie. He's clapping by himself. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? You're putting on a show. This is staged. And then they go up in the tunnel, and now this viral video has occurred because they have decided, let's just play with everybody. Let's have fun with everybody because we will go viral on the internet. But yet again, I thought going into the weekend, I thought this really was happening.
Both of them?
I believe Kevin Durant for sure would love to play in New York. And again, this has been the year. Like, I've never seen anything quite like this year for your building. Your building is Madison Square Garden. It is called the Mecca of basketball.
World's most famous arena.
It is. And yet, you haven't won a championship there since 1973. But what keeps happening night after night after visiting team night? Whoever, it's Dirk's last game at Madison Square Garden. It's James Harden. It's Steph Curry. Every visitor who goes into that building wants to put on the show of shows. So that's all you've had since 1973 is that the world wants to own your arena, right? But that's still pretty cool. And I think Kevin Durant is saying to himself, I would like to put on a show of shows every night for 41 games a year, 41 regular season games a year in that building. I would like to try to win a championship in the Big Apple, okay? And Kyrie grew up partially, spent some in Australia, but partially he went to high school in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And I think his father has Knicks in his blood, right?
Rod Strickland is a godfather.
Okay, you got it.
Great Nick, great New York player.
Great Nick. And so the bloodline's channeled that way for Kyrie. So it just seems right that if, in fact, they can fit two max under their cap, that would be a great move for both of them, depending on how the rest of the season plays out. Because the dominoes haven't started falling. And if the dominoes fall the wrong way, if Golden State falls on its face because Kevin and Draymond have fallen out, which is possible, then maybe Kevin decides, I don't know, like he needs to right the wrong and stay in Golden State for another year.
It's so being a Knicks fan has been so brutal. You know, this Porzingis character, that guy, the way
unicorn.
He left.
We didn't bring it up. Yeah, you did.
Yeah, yeah, him. I mean, everything. And then yesterday they're selling the Knicks and then they're not. We're comfortably, reluctantly numb at this point.
You are.
But Kevin Durant coming. It would look beautiful, too, because, you know, he's tall, thin-shouldered, beautiful like the Empire State Building. We put him up there on there. It would look beautiful.
Would look
We've
good.
Never had a star like
we
him.
We want it for you, Michael. Yeah. We want it for you.
And it's not just me. I'm just a vessel
for the
rest.
He speaks for everyone. Thank you for being here today. Always good to have you.
No mercy.
We're talking about Tim Tebow. He remains one of the most polarizing athletes, and he's expected to start the baseball season with the Mets AAA club. And he's received a lot of criticism both on the diamond and on the football field. But on Sunday, he had a strong message for his critics, and this video has gone viral. Take a listen.
It's really trying to keep perspective and not letting other people define you, because they sure do want to. And I try to encourage young people all the time to not let the world or other people, outside sources, define you, because you're always going to have critics and naysayers and people that are going to tell you that you won't, that you can't, that you shouldn't. Most of those people are the people that didn't, that wouldn't, that couldn't. And don't be defined by outside sources. You go after your dreams. Succeeding or failing is not making it to the bigs, or it's not necessarily fulfilling that. It's having to not live with regret because I didn't try. And, you know, I just feel for all the young people out there that don't go after something because they're so afraid of failing, that you're going to live with a lot more regret than you would have if you tried and you failed. And I'm very passionate about that. And I think the reason that a lot of people don't go after things is because how much you will be criticized. And what if I fall flat on my face? And so fear and doubt and all these things creep in. And I just don't believe that's the healthiest way to live. I don't want to have to live with fear or doubt every day. And, you know, regardless of what everyone here says about me, it doesn't define me.
All right, Rob, what was your reaction to
Skip,
all that?
For the first time, I agree with Tim Tebow on this part of his message. Not the entire message.
Okay. What's the asterisk here?
No, yeah. but I agree with this, because I believe this to be true. The reason most people don't succeed in life is because they're afraid to fail. Mm-hmm. I do believe that. So when he tells kids to go out and dream and reach for the stars and all that other stuff, you should. You can't be afraid. And so I get that part of him, and I think that's a great message to young people. But this whole notion that the that he's not warranted the criticism that he does get, I think that's where he misses the boat on this, is that this is what you've signed up for, Tim Tebow. I hate to break it to you, but along with being a pro athlete and your pursuit of being a baseball player and an NFL quarterback and all those things, comes with criticism when you don't get the job done, when you're not good enough. He was a college star, big-time college football star, and people expect the same thing when you go to the next level, and it didn't pan out. The bottom line is that he was 8-6 in his 14 NFL starts, 17 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. Skip, you could talk to your blue in the face about the one playoff win against Pittsburgh.
I just might.
Is it my turn yet? Not yet.
Is my face blue yet?
I already knew that was coming.
You set him up.
You know that. So I get that. And then when you talk about his baseball pursuit, God bless him for a guy who didn't play baseball for 10 years, who's willing to go into minor leagues. And yes, he could have run back to this minor league football, what is it, the AAFRP, or what? I don't know what the name of it is. Mm-hmm. But he could have run there for refuge and go, well, let me just go play football and end this baseball thing so I don't have to be embarrassed and me not make it to the major leagues. Mm-hmm. right? And people would say, oh, my God, Tim Tebow, he'd have the number one selling football jersey in that league overnight. I get all that. But his baseball numbers just aren't good enough. Double A last year, 273, six home runs, 36 RBIs, 103 strikeouts in 84 games, doesn't walk enough, 22 walks. His power, his OBP is only 336. When you start looking at these numbers, they're just not good enough. So there will come criticism about your play. So for him to push back on people who criticize, not him as a person, it's not personal. I tell people all the time, as sports writers and commentators, Skip, we're not talking about the guys, is he a good son or husband or father or boyfriend or whatever. That's not what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the job that you're doing and the position that you're in. And that's what we critique. And Tim Tebow is worthy of criticism when it comes to his play on the football field and his play in the minor leagues trying to make it to the majors. That's it. So I don't have any issue with most of his message, which is about not letting people, you know, be negative to the point where you don't even want to try. But I won't accept that Tim Tebow, like there's something wrong when people say that they don't think he's going to make it as a major league player or people didn't believe in him as a football player.
Just for the record, and I'm not blue in the face just yet.
Not yet.
Tim Tebow did make the Double A All-Star team last year.
Skip, that and 250 will get you on the subway in New York.
Okay, well, that will get you a lot of places because it might get you to the big leagues this year because that was extraordinary that he took really 11 years away from baseball and said, I'm going to go try this and I might fail. He was on the record from the start. I just might fail, but at least I'm going to try. And he risked national public humiliation because you could have gotten humiliated from the start to the point that the Mets just said, Tim, you got to go on home and try something new, right?
Yep.
But it didn't, it wasn't the worst. It wasn't the best, I'll give you that. But he has had flashes. He's had stretches where the Mets are saying, this just might work. I have told you from the start, he's hard to evaluate because he simply has the greatest intangibles I have ever encountered. I'm not friends with Tim Tebow. I do, you can say, share a faith with Tim Tebow. I believe a lot of what he believes, but I don't believe everything he believes, so that's not my connection to him. I just believe in him as a competitor because I saw what he did to my Oklahoma Sooners in the national championship game when he was screaming at halftime and said, we're going to take that Bronco, stick it right down their throat. And they did. They came right out in the third quarter, trailing at halftime by, I think it was 2 points, to Sam Bradford's Oklahoma Sooners and stuck it right down their throats. And he just took the game over in the fourth quarter, and the rest is national championship history. That was the Tebow I said, okay, I would take that guy late in the first round, and if you let him run his college offense, he won't make a Pro Bowl, but he will be able to win games in the National Football League. That's all I said. And Josh McDaniels, who's doing pretty well as we speak, right, with Tom Brady.
Oh, but that cost him his job in Denver.
No, it didn't cost him. That didn't cost him his job.
It was the videotaping?
The cheating cost him his job. Yeah, maybe.
Where'd he come
ship
from?
Off the block? Okay. I don't know. Okay. But that's a whole nother issue. But he did, with the 25th overall pick, say, I'm going to take Tim Tebow, and I'm going to let him do what he does. Unfortunately, Josh McDaniels only lasted halfway through the next year. So at the end of that year, they threw Tim Tebow into the fire and just said, here, we're dead in the water. Try this. And go look at what he did those last three games. I don't want to bore you with this, but they were pretty great, especially the one against Houston at home. He threw for 350 yards. And I thought, oh, that'll work. And then next year, John Elway took over and said, let's just get rid of him. Let's throw him into the fire at Miami, and this will go away in one day. And the rest is NFL history because he went on what I think is one of the great runs in the history of the league. He won a lot of late games with a lot of bad stats, but his stats at the end of those games were sensational.
I'm glad you put up the bad stats.
Well,
that you're
he
not
did.
Going to fake it.
But the best stat was that my favorite stat, QBR, in the last 5 minutes of all those games, he had the number one QBR in the National Football League that year, and he took a 1-4 Denver Broncos team just completely dead and took them to the division championship and a playoff win
against Skip, let's be honest. If you're going to relive that season, They also lost their last three games of that season.
Did they win?
Backed into the playoffs.
Did they win the division?
At 8-8, but I'm just being
they
honest.
They have won the division.
Did they not lose their last three games?
Right.
Yet?
They
that
did.
Tebow was unbelievable.
Did they not beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in a playoff game? Did Tim Tebow not hit Demaryius Thomas with a pass that I still haven't gotten over?
Well, because if it was any other defensive coordinator other than Dick LeBeau.
Oh, Dick LeBeau. One of the great defensive coordinators in the history of the league. Right?
But, Jenny, they had nobody. They were like 11-man front. They just put everybody in, like daring him to throw a 10-yard slant. And that's all it was. I mean, anybody else would have been fired after that play, Skip. And here's the other thing that I love. Whenever it's about Tim Tebow, it's the intangibles. You know why people bring up intangibles, Jenny?
Why?
This is when they don't have any stats. When they don't have any stats, I have to go to something that you can't see, I can't see, and the average fan can't see.
You know where you can see it?
No.
Scoreboard.
No, this is why.
Scoreboard. Rob Parker, when he gets called up to the big leagues, which is going to be your next worst moment of your career.
That's not going to happen.
You know, he will get called up to the big leagues. And when he does, he will instantly become the most popular figure in all of baseball. Does baseball not desperately need Tim Tebow right now? I watched some videos.
Tim Tebow doing what, Skip? Okay. Is he coming up to pinch hit?
You know what?
In the eighth inning?
Yeah, he will.
What
he
is
will.
He?
And you know what? I wouldn't bet against him
what
in
is
that
he,
situation.
Though? He's not a home run hitter. He's a big guy. He's not a home run hitter. He's had 14 home runs in 211 games.
Have you seen stats for some of the all-time sluggers in their first 2 years in the minors? It takes a long time to learn this game. You know it, and I know it.
It's one of the toughest things to do. I get you that. I get there, but I'm just not buying that Tim Tebow is going to make an impact in Major League Baseball.
He will.
Skip, he might have a cup of coffee and a sweet roll, but that's about it.
He'll have two or three big hits, game-winning hits for the Mets, and he will become the it player in baseball because that's what he's made of. And when he pulls that off, it's going to be sweet to a lot of people who believe in this guy because he did it against the longest odds you could ever do it against because the Rob Parkers were all saying, you are going to fall on your face in baseball, right?
I'm rooting for the guy. I hope you come back that day he gets called up to the
big leagues. I want to be here for that.
Yes, we're going to have you back for that moment. I have to agree. I'm with Skip. Tim Tebow. How do you not listen to that and be inspired by the guy?
I hear you.
No mercy.
Thanks for listening to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm Jenny Taft. Join us again same time tomorrow morning, 9:30 Eastern. See you then.
Facts, sports, one of one.